No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People the Right to Vote. Good evening and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about and affect the lives of all of us. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Maria Sanchez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and that affect us all. So please join in the conversation by calling in at 888-627-6008. Or you can Skype your comments and questions to BBSRADIO1. Tonight, we have a very special guest, Frank Smith, civil rights leader and activist, former D.C. council member, longtime statehood advocate, and founder and executive director of the African American Civil War Memorial and Museum here in Washington. So stay tuned and call in and be part of the discussion. Again, the number is 888-627-6008. Hello, Maria.
Hello,
Thanks
Michael.
Thanks for being part of this discussion. Sorry about the Dodgers.
Yeah, me too.
You know, it would be, I would have more empathy if it weren't
yes.
for the fact that they beat up my poor Nationals and knocked them out early on. But
and of course, you don't carry grudges now, do you?
No, you know that. You know that. Get
yes.
me talking about the Dallas Cowboys one day, and you'll find out how long I carry grudges.
The L.A. Rams lost this morning in the U.K.
Well, if it's
they were at Twickenham Stadium.
Oh wow! Well, it's fun that they do that.
And I think so too.
But the Skins also lost, and they lost with a minute. They were ahead with 1 minute to go, and those nasty Detroit Lions marched right on down the field and got a
really?
Touchdown. Yeah, and beat them by 3 points in the end.
Hey, so, Michael, I like the way that you refer to them as the Skins.
Yeah.
Has that been proposed?
No. I mean, they proposed everything, you know, because so many of us are embarrassed by the name. We feel it's racist. And it's really not even so much that I feel it's racist, but I know a lot of Native Americans that feel it. So it's hard for me to say the R word. But I've been a fan since I was 12 years old. So I try to find a way around it. Sometimes I call them Washington. Sometimes I call them Skins. But yeah, for years we have. Many people have called
them.
Well,
but Skin says it all. And I knew exactly what you were talking about.
Yeah. Well,
there was no having to translate East Coast, West Coast jargon, nickname, whatever. I got it.
Well, we're working on it. You know, I know we'll have to have her on the show sometime. I know the woman who for Susan Harjo, who for years and years had worked to change the name. But tonight, we're lucky enough to have Frank Smith with us. What an amazing man this man is. And when we get him on, we'll discuss some of the things he's done, but he's just had an amazing life and continues to be a force in Washington, D.C. So I'm so honored that he would take the time to come out for the first half of our show. Frank, are you there?
I sure am. I've been listening to you talk about baseball and football team.
Yeah. Yeah.
If
well.
I may, because I don't know Mr. Smith, I just would like to say that I'm so honored and humbled to have your acquaintance, and thank you so much for everything that you have done for our country.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. I'm 74 years old now, so anytime somebody says something nice about me, I'm happy to hear it.
Well, as the senator said, an exemplary history and bravery. I mean, wow. It must be terrible. And Michael, I assume you're going to go over his bio a little bit, so our listeners who may not be familiar will understand the enormity of our conversation.
Yeah, we're going to go over it a little bit, because if we went over the whole thing, the half an hour would be up. I mean, he's had an amazing life. And, you know, one of the founders of SNCC, which is, for those that may not know, that's the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, which played such a central role in the civil rights movement in the South in the 1960s. And you know, people like Lawrence Gyatt and my personal hero, Fannie Lou Hamer, these were the colleagues that Mr. Smith worked with, and you know, he most importantly, and we'll talk about this in a minute. First, I want to talk about statehood, but he also is the founder and executive director of a thing called the African American Civil War Memorial and Museum here in Washington, which is a great museum, which he generously lends out to us from time to time to have statehood.
I wouldn't exactly call it renting it out to you guys. I host you.
No,
all
I said
there,
lending it out. You never rent it out. That may be a problem for you, but you do lend it out. On occasion, and we appreciate that because, as you know, our delegation gets along on the kindness of strangers. We don't have a very big budget, so we very much appreciate people like you standing up and helping us. But before we talk about the museum, can we talk about statehood for a minute? Because that's what the show, you know, one of the main aims of the show. And you know, you've been involved in that movement, and you're so involved in the civil rights movement. Why do you think we haven't gotten farther?
Let me just back up for a minute for the national audience to say that I spent, as you said, 6 years in Mississippi with a group called SNCC, Student Nonviolent Coordinating. When I went to Mississippi, there were virtually no black people registered to vote. During my tenure in 1965, they passed the 65 Voting Rights Act, and then between 65 and 68, which is when I left, we registered 100,000 black people in Mississippi, people running for office, and serving in office and you know, becoming mayors of these little towns and stuff. I moved to Washington, D.C. in January and discovered people in Washington, D.C. don't have a right to vote. I go from the Mississippi Delta to Washington, D.C.
People
do not have the right to vote. At that time, they were not voting for anything, including a school board or anything, and a mayor, city council. So I think for the country, rest of the country, it's important to put this in perspective, that people bled and died and went to jail for the right to vote in Mississippi and Alabama and Georgia. People in the nation's capital still do not have that basic right to vote.
Right, right. And that's part of our problem, is getting that word out. And most people are even surprised at facts like Lyndon Johnson was the first president we ever got to vote for, that we didn't have the right to vote until even for president until the 1960s.
Right,
and that, yeah, I'm sorry.
It was like living on a plantation in Mississippi, I'm telling you. So we still don't have the right to vote in the Congress or the Senate. And, you know, we send our young people off to war like everybody else. My 54-year-old son was in the first Gulf War. And my grandson is a Navy SEAL right now. He's serving over
really?
There. Yeah.
Wow.
And yet I don't get to vote. For the Congress, which declares war. I don't get to vote in the Congress because my statehood delegation is not allowed to vote. And so I think for the nation, this is something that was, you know, I hope people will be excited about this and help us out here. We need to help the rest of the nation get this done.
Well, I certainly appreciate you adding some perspective, because here I am in Los Angeles on the left coast, and I didn't know about this really until I had the privilege to encounter the senator, I don't know how many years ago it's been, Michael, when I first was a guest on your program with Kathleen. But it's like, I don't get it. And I can imagine you, like you said, Mr. Smith, that you come from Mississippi. and then you go, you feel like you went from the frying pan into the fire being in D.C.
Absolutely, absolutely. And now eventually we get the right to vote for the city council and for mayor, but still today we do not have the right to vote in the Congress of the United States or in the Senate. And it's the Congress, which, according to the Constitution, which declares war. I have to pay for war like everybody else. I have to send my children off to war, like grandchildren, like everybody else. And yet I don't get to vote in that very body which makes that basic decision. It's just not right.
It's not right. It's against every principle that the country on which the country was founded. And you're right. We need to get the word out because people really don't understand. Well, let me ask you, what do you think of this latest effort by the mayor and the statehood commission to follow the Tennessee plan and make a demand of Congress? Do you think we're on the right path here?
Well, yeah, I think that it's one of those cases where if we get lucky and the cards fall right and we win both the White House and at least one house, they hope that both houses of Congress, we may be able to get this done. I can give me a bow of credit for having initiated this and having started back some months ago to get all of the various things done that we needed to do in order to qualify so we can actually send this petition, send this, the Constitution forward. And so I do believe we have a chance at this. I think it's one of the better chances that we've had in a long time. And let's hope we can make it happen.
Yeah.
So to back up, I'm unfamiliar with the Tennessee plan. What does that mean? What's entailed?
Well, Tennessee in 1794 got tired of waiting for Congress to approve them as a state. So they went and they elected two senators and sent them to Washington to lobby for statehood. And they followed a plan where they demanded statehood from Congress. They made the demand. Those two senators went to Washington and made the demand. And that's what we're trying to do. We've put a referendum on the ballot. And of course, Tennessee shortly thereafter got statehood. But we've put a referendum on the ballot, an advisory referendum, which would tell the D.C. Council and our delegation, direct us to go to Capitol Hill and to the president and demand statehood. So it really is a method to put us on the offense instead of us sitting around waiting for Congress to act. We would make the demand of Congress. And six other jurisdictions have used the Tennessee plan to become states. So we're very hopeful that, you know, that making the demand will make a difference. It doesn't give us statehood. We still have to put in a bill, which is approved by both houses and approved by the president, which is with why Mr. Smith says if we get a favorable outcome in the election and get control of the houses, because it's become a partisan issue, that may in fact happen. So that's basically the Tennessee plan.
So Michael, is the referendum on the ballot
yes.
next month?
Yes, it's on the ballot November 8th.
How many signatures did you have to get it?
None, under? Because it's an advisory referendum, so the council voted to put it on.
Oh.
Normally, like the marijuana referendum and the other referendum, which carry some weight, you have to get thousands of signatures to get it on the ballot. But this, since it's advisory in nature, the council could put it on without going through the process that we normally go through and which you always go through in California. Let me ask you, Frank, tell us about the establishment, because I think this is fascinating. And if people come to Washington, they need to see this place. But please tell us about the establishment of the African American Civil War Memorial and Museum.
Okay. Well, you know, I moved to Washington, I said, in 1968. In 1976, I got elected to the city council, and I represented what was probably the most diverse ward in the city. It was black, white, and Hispanic, and it was really a wonderful ward. But it also had in it the center, sort of the epicenter of of the riot of 1968 when Dr. King was killed, which just devastated this historic black community. And so as a council member, it became my job to try to figure out how to do something about it. Washington, D.C. is full of monuments. They're just all downtown, around the mall, around the White House. And so we came to this idea of building a monument off the mall in a neighborhood. All we had to do was get things built and then try to convince tourists when they came to the city to come into that neighborhood to help shop and revitalize our community. So it had two beginnings. One was to revitalize the neighborhood. Another one was to pay tribute to African-American soldiers, 209,145 soldiers who joined the Union Army, joined President Abraham Lincoln's army to fight for their freedom. And three out of four of these soldiers were enslaved when the war started. They were living in the states of the Confederacy. They joined the Union Army, and they literally fight their way to freedom. And so they got very little recognition until we built this monument. If you're going to build something like this, you got to build something people can't see anywhere else. You got to do something magical with it. That's why we found these 200,000 names, put them out there on this wall. They're organized by regiments. And we're doing something very special right now, Michael. We're doing a display, an exhibit, working on an exhibit, which tells a story about First Lady Michelle Obama's great-great-great-grandfather, whose name was Caesar Cohen. He was living on a plantation in South Carolina on the Weymouth Plantation. When the Union Army comes through there, the 128th Regiment, in 1863, he joins the Army and fights his way to freedom. And so we're doing a special exhibit called From Slavery to the White House, the story of First Lady Michelle Obama's family. Now, let me just tell you how this relates to statehood. The last year of the war, 1864, by now, people know who's going to win this war. Sherman has already captured Atlanta. He's in Savannah. Grant has Lee surrounded down in Richmond. They're now talking about how they're going to end this war, and they're talking about clemency for all these Confederates who have lost their citizenship because they had fought against the U.S. and committed treason. So Frederick Douglass is saying to President Abraham Lincoln, these men who join you in war, in order for them to defend themselves when they go back home to these states where they reside, they're going to need the right to vote. They need the vote to defend themselves. That's what we do when we vote. We use the vote to defend ourselves. Right. It's the voice we have in America to stand up for ourselves. And if you can't vote, you really can't defend yourself. And it's really unfair. I get real passionate about this when I talk about it because it really is so unfair. It's so unfair that we have people who live in D.C., young people who never change their residency. And they come here and they live here for years. They remain residents in other states because they know they can vote in that state for a senator and a congressman, and they can't vote in the District of Columbia. And so they pay sales taxes, but they don't have to pay income tax because you pay income tax in the place where you're a resident. So it's just a strange system here, and it's one that I'd like to see us do something about. And I talk about it all the time because these soldiers paved the way. You know, at the end of the war, Congress passes these three amendments. The 13th Amendment abolishes slavery. The 14th Amendment makes African-American citizens. The 15th Amendment gives black men the right to vote. Black men get the right to vote in 1870. Women don't get the right to vote until 1919. And, of course, some people say none of them get the right to vote until 1960s when the Civil Rights Movement actually gets out there and gets people back on the rolls. But this is an important battle. It's one that I think we have a chance of winning because, as Dr. King said, the moral arc of the universe is strong, but it bends toward justice. We've seen progress in the last 50 years for African Americans, for Latinos, and for women. And I think this issue is a moral and a civil rights issue, too. And it's one that I think in this atmosphere we might get done.
Well, I got to tell you, I can't overemphasize how important this whole connectedness that you talk about is, because it is a civil rights movement. And sometimes people forget that. They feel like that we're asking for some kind of favor or dispensation or a exception to the rule, and we're not. We're just asking for our basic civil rights, and it's important for people to understand that whole progression from the slaves that fought for their freedom in the Civil War to people like Rosa Parks and the Montgomery bus boycott to what goes on here in Washington. Because you're right, when the country started, Very few people had the right to vote. I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if there were more registered voters in the district today than were allowed to vote in the first election. You know, because there's over 400,000 of us, and so few were allowed to. You know, you had to be white, you had to be a property owner, you had to be over 21, you had to be male. You know, a lot of people were cut out. So I think it's. You know, that's really.
And I think also, let me just add one other thing to it, too, Senator, and that is this. This is the point you're making. America has opened up to be a real democratic country grudgingly and slowly. It really has. As you say, when you started out with only white men who had property, you had to have, I think, at least 7 acres of property and so much money in order for you to be able to vote. And then grudgingly, during the war, actually, African Americans get the right to vote because as when these congressmen say when they're debating the 15th Amendment to the Constitution, they say these men earned their right to vote. They earned their citizenship on the battlefield. So they use that as a pretext at a time when women can't join the military. They use that as a pretext to give these men the right to vote. And of course, women don't get the right to vote till 1919. So this whole progression of this being a democracy, which represents all of the people and where all of the people actually get represented in this body politics, is something that has happened really slowly. And I think that America owes a great debt of gratitude to the black community. Let me just beat my own chest here for a minute, because we have fought this issue for ourselves for so many years. And as we have opened up this society with the Voting Rights Act and with the Civil Rights Act, we have opened it up for other people, for gays and for women and for others. And I think, as I said before, as Dr. King said, the moral arc of the universe is going in the right direction. This country is headed in the right direction, but this is a slow, grudging process. And D.C. maybe now finally might be able to convince enough people that we've been treated unfairly all these years. We pay taxes. We send our children off to war. We do what everybody else does. We're subject to all these laws, but we don't get to vote. In the body where these federal laws are being made in Congress and the Senate.
Well, so my question is that if this referendum passes, then what?
Well, then we make this demand of Congress. You know that Frederick Douglass, who's one of our, you know, this fits right into Frank Smith's bailiwick, but he's one of our favorite sons here in Washington. In fact, the D.C. Council just voted to name the new state Washington, D.C., which would stand for Douglas Commonwealth in his honor. But he said that power could seize nothing without a demand, never did and never will. And I've never found anything in this struggle to be more true. So that's all the referendum does for us, really, is it allows us to make the demand. Rather than sitting back on defense, I'll use a football analogy, we're going on offense and saying, look, this is what we want, say yes or no. Because as Frank points out, so many people have fought and died for these rights, it's really hard for members of Congress to stand up and deny us in the light of day. But when they can do it without, by not responding, it seems to us that it's easier. So hopefully, you know, the next step is to walk into the Capitol with the referendum and to walk into the White House and say, you know, we want statehood because it makes us equal.
So if the referendum doesn't pass, then what?
Then we're in a lot of trouble.
And I moved, then, it's going to pass, don't worry.
Yeah, then Frank and I moved to California.
and we'll
you
set
get
up
us settled somewhere, yeah. And I think we're pretty hopeful that it'll pass. Because for the people of Washington, this is really, you know, kind of what I think we would call a no-brainer. But I got to tell you, I was at a rally yesterday to kick off things because it was early voting. And Marie and I will get to this in a few minutes when we talk about current events. But I've never seen that many early voters in the district club ever in my life. So hopefully this will be a big deal for us and we'll get, 80%. approval rating.
Well,
some
it would
really
be nice
high.
If it was resounding, but do you yes. get just need one over 50, or do you need 2/3, or what do you need to for it to be a passed, if you will?
Well, since it's a PR effort, basically, the bigger the better. So right. You don't want 51%. I don't think we consider that a victory, but the more the merrier, I guess. The more of sponsorship we have for the referendum, the bigger the message is.
That's what I would think. Yeah. Because you want it to be what the entire population wants of the District of Columbia, not right. just a simple majority.
Right, that's right. You do. So tell us with the few minutes that we have left, first I want to know how people, I know you guys have a website. How do people look? What's the website for the museum, Frank?
Okay. The website is afroamcivilwar.org. AFROAM, and then spell out the word Civil War, CIVILWAR, .org. You can find us online, or we're in Washington, D.C., at 1925 Vermont Avenue Northwest. And you know, Michael, we celebrated the opening of a new museum here on the mall, one that's located right. downtown a few weeks
yeah.
ago. And we had a big festival. We had a shuttle bus running down there. That exhibit has an exhibit in it called From Blacks in the Military. It covers all of the blacks that in all the military wars from Crispus Attucks through World War II and up to the Vietnam War and today. And we're a part of that. A part of that covers the Civil War. And then they refer people to us. They say, if you want to know more about this, you got to go to the African American Civil War Museum. So we believe that museum is going to make the idea of going to museums more interesting. We know from studies that we have seen that young people who go to museums do better in STEM and science and technology and math and all of their studies. They also do better in life. And so we are working hard trying to get every student in the District of Columbia and the surrounding area in through our museum. I've had people come from as far away as Australia. I've had visitors twice. Some people have visited twice from Australia who come to our museum, and we've still got people in Southeast Washington who've never been there. We've got people in Prince George's County, Maryland, and out in Northern Virginia who've never been there. So we're working hard to serve everybody here in this area, and when people come to Washington, we hope they'll come see us.
Well,
so,
absolutely.
Mr. Smith, though, one second. At your age, what is it like for you to be as busy as you are? And I do hope that doesn't sound condescending, because
you sound busier
than somebody half your age.
Well, you know what? Abraham Lincoln says, I like Lincoln. He has a lot of quotes. He said, one of his quotes is, I have to do the best I can for as long as I can with all that I have. And so I'm sort of like that. But this is what I do now. I run a museum for a guy who was born in Georgia on a plantation, spent 5 years in Mississippi.
Yeah.
Working at a museum is hard for me to call that work. It's something I do that I enjoy every day. And if God had told me when I was a little boy that when I got 70 years old, I'd be running a museum in the nation's capital, I would have done better. I would have done a lot of things differently when I was younger. I would have taken better care of myself. But I'm having fun, and we're serving a purpose here. We're involved in this fight, but not only the state of it, but we're involved in the fight to talk to people about how important the vote is. We want to see the voter registration turnout go up much higher. It is abysmally low in areas, especially in the low-income black community, which is something that just baffles me. I don't understand it at all. So we've got a lot of work to do, and I'm happy to be out there for as long as I can.
That's awesome.
Well, let me just tell you, as somebody that's been to the museum, it is an amazing place that everybody that comes to Washington should see. I was at the dedication of the African American Museum of History and Culture on the Mall, and let me tell you, that's one of the most popular, maybe the single most popular museum in D.C. today. I think they said that they're giving out, it's free to come in, but you have to get tickets. I think they're giving out tickets now for like February.
Really?
That's how long
Yeah. The Lions are, yes. Yes.
Yeah.
They have lifted the boats of everybody. The visitation at our museum has gone up probably 30 or 40% just because of this.
That's great.
Because that new museum is open up, and it has it's an enormous place. It is. It takes two or three visits to get through it. So people are going to have a good when they come to Washington to see that museum. They're going to have a good experience.
Nice.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show, Frank. I hope you'll come back sometime so that we can talk about this again. It was a real honor to have you on, and I'll give you the final word, Maria. But Maria and I will be back in a minute to refight the Civil War when we talk about the presidential election and what's going on. But during the break, we'd like to play a song by Sam Cooke as in honor of Mr. Smith's visit. There's so many beautiful civil rights songs to choose from. But this one is one of my favorite. A Change Is Going to Come. Thanks again, Mr. Smith, for being on the show.
Thank you very much. And thank you, Maria.
You're welcome, Mr. Smith. Continued success, sir.
All right. Thank you. Make sure you get California to vote statehood for District of Columbia.
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you. If anybody can do it, it's Maria.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. All right. I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We'll be back in a minute.
Like the river I've been running ever since. It's been a long.
And we're back. First, we've had Frank Smith, who's been an inspiration to us all. And now Maria and I are going to talk about the week's events. Do you want to go first, Maria, or?
Well, we got to talk first about the debate because it was the third largest number ever with 71.6 million watching it. And that's according to Nielsen. But interestingly enough, it's based on the four main networks, the nine cable outlets and public television. But I happened to watch the event for the first time ever online. So,
and I bet a lot of my kids, I bet if my kids watched it all, that's how they did it. I bet a lot of young
people. So imagine how many of us there were. My deal is because I don't have a television, so my girlfriend was going to have me over, but she didn't want to start till 8:30. And at 6 o'clock, Pacific, I just couldn't wait any longer. I had to watch, so I watched it by myself online.
Well,
so that's not counted in the number, but to the debate itself, yes.
And there was a great picture. I forget what newspaper it was in, but there was a great picture that somebody took on an airplane where everybody's screen was on the debate.
Is that right?
The plane. Yeah. And I don't want to digress here because we have a lot to talk about, but what do you mean you don't have a television? That's un-American.
I don't.
I thought your citizenship automatically got revoked, especially in Los Angeles.
Yeah. No television, Harris? No microwave, no toaster oven. I have the internet. I've never been my whole life, honestly. I've never been a television viewer. If I have time, that's when I read. And so when I moved 2 years ago and I thought, I'm going to just put up art. I don't need a wall for a TV. I only use my television for music. And then the kids would come over and when we used to have weekly dinners and they would bring me an episode of something. So it was something else. Yeah. So it was interesting that all came down where I finally just decided, yeah, no TV. And I get along just fine.
My grandmother never watched. My grandmother watched Gunsmoke and Lawrence Welk, and that was it. And we always used to kid her that she had a crush on James Arness, who was the star of but she thought it was stupid because you couldn't work. You know what I mean? She was always working. She was always needlepointing or cooking or doing something. And she'd rather listen to the radio than because you could continue to do whatever it was you were doing. You didn't have to focus on TV. So I admire that. But let's talk about the debate. I think both sides are saying they won. And I think that, you know, I think that Donald Trump made some mistakes, but I think that it was his best performance.
I agree.
So far,
you know, it's like a train wreck for me. I'm holding up my hands, looking between my fingers, like, ugh. And at least he seemed to, well, initially, if at least he was much more calm. He still was doing a little of the sniffing, whatever that's about, but just more like a gentleman, you know, like a decent human being.
And yeah, then, but you know, yeah, still falling back into calling her, you know, look, giving her this opening of being a you know, a nasty woman and some of that stuff, and then moving on to Gettysburg. You know,
yes.
I just don't get it. I don't get why he's having a speech at this famous battleground, and he starts out by trashing these women. Why he doesn't? Why he's keeping this alive? Why he just doesn't get beyond it and give his speech? There were people. Now, I don't agree with many of the things that he's talking about because, first of all, he can't do that. You can't, as the president of the United States, you cannot impose term limits. Not something I believe in necessarily, but I know a lot of Americans do. But that takes an act of Congress. It's not something the president could do. And there were several items like that. I also don't believe that you should take money away from the global climate change initiative. But that, you know, that's neither here nor there. Those are differences on policy issues. But for him to stand up there, and the thing that bothered me most is when he said all these women are lying, he got a little applause. But then when he said, I'm going to sue them all, the crowd roared.
Yeah.
And that's really what bothers me about his campaign, is that they seem like they want to get even with America.
Well,
and I don't get that.
You know, it's a distraction, obviously. And the latest poll numbers that I read said that Hillary leads Trump by 20 points with women. And 69%, I think, was the number of the women who are voting for her. It's because of the sex scandal with Trump.
Yeah.
And so I know you can take it. I happen to take it like, geez, we're talking about sex instead of about policy. That's where I think we should go. And there's been plenty of presidents and, you know, Roger Ailes, et cetera, with Fox, who do inappropriate things. And then it sounds like I'm defending the acts, which I'm not. So it's a tough one for me because it's ugly any way you look at it. It really
is.
Well,
and it's tough for everybody. I mean, you've got Republicans out there bailing on them right and left, guys like Rob Portman. And I understand, I didn't even see what paper this is, but he got a major paper endorsement today. But, you know, you've got the Arizona Republic, you've got the paper in Utah
and Dallas
coming out against them. You get in Dallas, and you've got every member of the Utah delegation. My God, they tried to pair Utah with the District of Columbia for voting rights initiative because Utah is singly the most Republican state in America, just like the D.C. is the most Democratic jurisdiction. So they tried to pair us up a few years ago on a thing called the D.C. Voting Rights Act so that we would both get a new vote in Congress because, you know, it was based on the Missouri plan where safe states and non-slave states went in. But yeah, Utah's the most Republican place in America. And their entire delegation, the senator, the congressman, they've all turned against him. In Ohio, you've got Portman, you've got the governor against him. You know, it's amazing. And I think it's not so much what he says, but how he says it. You know, the latest controversy, of course, is his refusal to accept, you know, saying
yes,
he's refusing to accept the outcome of the election. And I don't think anybody out there is saying that there's no such thing as voter fraud, but nobody's ever done this. And I'll tell you, this is what bothers me, and I'd like to hear what you have to say about this. This was reported in the Boston Globe. It's a quote from one of his followers who said, Trump said to watch the precincts. I'll look for, well, it's called racial profiling. Mexicans, Syrians, people who can't speak American. I'm going to go right up behind them. I'll do everything legally. I want to see if they are accountable. I'm not going to do anything illegal. I'm going to make them a little bit nervous. I mean, that's what bothers me the most, is that the rhetoric is inspiring this sort of thing.
Well, and what, by shadowing them, that's going to make them do the right thing? I mean, what's the point? Intimidating? Is that what it is? Or I've got my eyes on you?
Intimidating. And they want to talk about Democratic voter fraud, and I bet there's been some. But there's a lot more of this intimidation. I was part of a campaign for John Kerry in Minnesota where a guy was actually arrested at the polls for doing exactly that. And they had done like, you know, what they would do is one of the things they were doing on the Indian reservation was they were sending out guys in suits and ties to write down everybody's license plates and numbers. Now, there's nothing illegal about that, but they understand that almost every Native American is on some sort of government assistance, gets something from the government. So they dress these guys up to look like people from the government to come out and write down their tag numbers. And it's intimidation. And that stuff goes on, too. Not enough to affect the results of an election. I mean, I don't think a whole lot of people are intimidated by that. But it's this, you know, him inspiring people to want to do stuff like that.
Well, but then there was the story about the DNC with the Chicago rally in March, that they were encouraging the bullying of women. That's not getting much traction at all.
I didn't hear about that. I didn't hear about that. But of course, you know, at least I think if that could be verified in any way, that you would have the Clinton campaign coming out and saying it's wrong. This guy isn't out there saying it's wrong. He's saying, let's do it. Let's wait and see what happens, you know. And they're trying to and then his people come back with this lame stuff about Al Gore. You know, it was such a different situation. Gore didn't say anything about the results of the election until an automatic recount was called. You know, and people need to understand that there are automatic recalls. So if the election is so close that there could have been an error in counting up the votes, or there could have been incidences of fraud or intimidation or whatever the parameters are, there is a recount. It's automatic, you know, which is a safeguard in the system. And I just, you know, I think that's what bothers me the most, is that he's not out there on the campaign trail being responsible.
I would agree, but you know what? He also is being who he is, which has been consistent, unlike the flip-flops that we see sometimes. And again, it's really tough to defend him. I don't know what I'm going to do, honestly, Michael. I was just having this conversation with this very liberal Northern Californian, and he thinks he may recuse himself from the vote too, because he doesn't like either choice. And he's like, people say to me, you need to vote, you need to vote. And he goes, why would I vote for someone that I don't want?
Right. Well, let me tell you, as a lifelong Democrat who bleeds Democrat blue, who believes in the Democratic Party, the thing that I think is most troubling about this is that I'm watching the Republican Party. I'm afraid they're going to be torn apart by this man. And you know what? You don't want the Democrats running everything without any interference from the opposition any more than you would want the Republicans doing it. I mean,
welcome to the state of California. Elective office is blue.
Well, and every office in the District of Columbia is blue, and we have lots of problems.
But we got millions and millions of citizens.
I know.
Millions. I think I've mentioned her before. One of my girlfriends is a Democrat and is an assembly member. And she says, you know, the Republicans kind of just know that nothing matters, and they just kind of sit there waiting for us to figure it out, because it's, you know, there's really nothing they can do.
Well,
in Sacramento, this is.
You, I can tell you that there are people in Washington, D.C. who are Republicans who say, you know, I'm in disengaged because my vote doesn't matter. And of course, part of our problem in getting statehood is the fact that, you know, we only have 12 Republicans in all of Washington, D.C., and we have those little devices on them so we can follow them and see what they're doing. But the truth of the matter is we've never voted for a Republican for president. We've never we don't have any elected Republicans in District of Columbia. And there are Republicans here who are good, decent Americans that want to be involved in the process, who feel disenfranchised just by the even in local politics by the fact that Democrats run everything. And it's a problem we have up on Capitol Hill, you know.
Well, and we in California have this unique situation where this was the first year that the two top vote getters in the primary are who makes it to the ballot, regardless of the party. So for our votes for senator in California, we have two Democrats, Kamala Harris and Loretta Sanchez.
Yeah.
And those are the two choices. So
here in Washington, you know, I just got to be honest. Here in Washington, you know, I've run for city office, for citywide office many times. And when I win the Democratic primary, which I've done a couple of times, on election day, we go out and we give out donuts to people and shake their hands and say thank you, because no one has ever won the Democratic primary in the District of Columbia and then turned around and lost the general election. It's a fait accompli. That's why I encouraged my kids. I said, you know, they want to become independents because they're upset with the system. And I say to them, don't register as an independent. Register as a Democrat or register as a Republican, because otherwise your vote doesn't count in a city that has preferential primaries. You got to got to vote in the primary, because that's the only election that really counts. But it's going to be a rough couple of weeks, I think.
It is. Well, and what's interesting too, Michael, is so the latest ABC poll has Clinton ahead by 12 points. And then there are three polls that actually have Trump leading, which is Rasmussen, Investors Business Daily, and the USC Dornsife Los Angeles Times poll, which the Los Angeles Times is notoriously liberal. So I found that curious this afternoon.
Yeah, it is curious. And I think that I don't think that the pundits really know where this one is going to go exactly. I think a lot of times ahead of time, they're pretty good at predicting. But it's still a close enough race, I think, that everybody is pretty much, you know, trying to get their base out there, because they understand a shift in the wind either way can tip the balance. The balance. Look at Trump's gone way down in the last, you know, couple of weeks. There's still a couple of weeks left. It's not that the pendulum can't swing the other way. So I think, you know, I really don't think we know exactly what to expect. But
it'll probably come down to turnout, is my guess. Who turns out?
Yeah, and very often in close races, that's what it comes down to, right? It comes down to who's got more boots on the ground, who can actually get their people out and to the polls. And, you know, and the thing that everybody has to think about is where we're going to go after this. You know, I think that if I was running right now for president, that I might say to the American people, you know, I've really given this a second thought, and I'm not too interested in continuing the campaign, but best of luck, because no matter who gets in there, it's not going to be nice. You're going to have a lot of fearful opposition, and that's another thing that bothers me. The Trump campaign, they just did a survey that said 50% of his people think that if he doesn't win it, it's because the system's rigged. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mean, I remember, you know, I keep on saying this on the show and elsewhere, that whenever I find myself in a tough position, I think about the 10 or 12 things that my grandmother said over and over and over again. And one of them was, be careful what you wish for. Mm-hmm. So I would say that to both candidates, be careful what you wish for. It's not going to be an easy way for either one of you.
Well, you know, this rig thing, which I hate the word because it sounds so pejorative because you must be for Trump if you use the word. In fact, I've had trouble with conversations recently where I'd say, well, you know, that is going to trump that. And they look at me and I go, it's not about politics. It's the phrase.
Right. It's a word.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. But when we had the internet sabotage this week, that kind of thing, and with those huge entities that suffered from it, that's what fuels some of this, you know, suspicion behavior, thinking, well, if that can happen, if Russia could hack into Hillary's John Podesta's and give it to WikiLeaks, I mean, it's not just in theory, it's in reality is what's going on.
Well, I think that, you know, we really do need to be vigilant until this, the stuff that you're talking about happened. I was one of those people that said, why can't we vote online? Why can't we vote online? I mean, I get online with my American Express card and I buy all sorts of things and it's secure. And I haven't had my number stolen or my account hacked, but then when you see stuff like this, you go, oh, maybe, you know.
Well, I'll have to tell you, when I moved 2 years ago, I re-registered to vote online, and it gave me the willies thinking that what happens if this doesn't go through? I won't know it, right? So,
right.
And it did, and actually it worked flawlessly, which I'm happy to report. But still, it's like, well, who's going to track this? And how do I know if I got into the right place? Because there's personal information there, and who's handling it and everything else. But, you know, of course you wouldn't think about that when you mail something in, because the person to whom it's addressed is who the intended receiver is, should be reading it, not on the internet where you can look over people's shoulder. I mean, not me, of course, but anybody who is sinister in that regard, they can.
Well, and that's the thing, you know, if you have to go and intercept, you know, a lot of mail to get information as opposed to pushing a button. That's the thing, that this information, when you know, when it gets exposed, it's all exposed, you
right.
know?
I tell my kids there is no such thing as privacy. Nothing is private. So,
well, you got to be careful what you do on the internet, right?
Yes,
Because 40 years from now, who at the age of 50 would want to be judged by what they were at 18, you know?
Right.
I mean, how many women do I know in my life who have looked at pictures when they were 18 or 21 and said, oh, I can't believe my hair looked like that. Mm-hmm. Or, oh, I can't believe that I actually wore that dress. Mm-hmm. You know, right? Because you change so much. But that's the internet. And that's the first thing we train people in politics when we're doing the candidate training. We say to them, man, think about everything you've ever said or ever written. And if you've done anything stupid, get in front of it now, because it's going to come out.
Yep.
But hopefully people will get out to the polls and vote. If you don't want to vote for either main candidate, I was thinking last week, maybe we should come up with some, you know, universal thing, like write in Thomas Jefferson or, and that way, if everybody wrote in the same name, they could show their displeasure. Of course, what if Jefferson wins? Then then you got another problem.
As if we have that kind of influence this close out.
You don't think so? I'm sure there are billions of people out there listening to us. But anyway.
They're not. I'm just saying
For those six people that are out there listening to us, it's time for us to go. So
yes.
I'll be a gentleman here and give you the last word, and then we may or may not be back next week, folks. We may run a rerun because Maria's busy and I unfortunately have an engagement. So but we're going to try to put a show on because there's only 2 weeks before the election.
Well, so. And that's the most important thing. If you haven't registered to vote, there's still time to do so. And if you are registered to vote, please vote. And you can recuse yourself. You can abstain from certain if you just can't morally justify it. So just keep going down the ticket, down the line, and keep on voting. Because local government affects your lives more than national government, frankly.
Well, and besides that, I say this to young people all the time. If you don't vote, politicians understand that. And when it comes to choosing between Social Security and education, they're always going to choose Social Security because they know old people vote and young people don't. So if for nothing else, get out there and represent your constituency.
Very nice. Okay. Thank you so much. Thank you, America. Have a great week.
Yep. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks, Maria.
Give the people their right to vote.